Noah did. All right, and then they settled in the land of Canaan, and who was it that ruled over them? First. Judges. Okay, so that's the next period. It's the period of the judges. Children of Israel were not happy with that, and so they wanted a king, and the first king was who? Saul, the next king that we count. Actually, Saul's son was for a little while, but very, very short time. The next king we count, though, is David. Okay. And then the next king after that, Solomon, and then his son was Rehoboam. Yeah, Rehoboam. Okay. So that period is known as what? No. The United Kingdom. Yeah, the United Kingdom. Now then, Rehoboam took over, son of Solomon. The people revolted. Jeroboam took over in the northern kingdom. God gave him 10 of the tribes. And so then that period is called what? The divided kingdom. Okay. And that's where we are. In 2 Kings chapter 2, we're in the divided kingdom. Now, I mentioned last week that on the Mount of Transfiguration, who appeared to Jesus? Moses and Elijah. Moses represented what? To the Jewish people. The law. The lawgiver. Okay. Elijah represented what? The prophets. Okay. The prophets. And we talked about very briefly last week, chapter 2. Elijah told Elisha that he was going to be leaving. And so various groups would come to Elisha and ask him, did you know that your master is going to be taken? And he said, yes, don't talk about it. And so he kept following Elijah, and Elijah would say, you stay here and I'm going to go on. And he said, no, I'm going to go with you. He said, so they went together for a while, and he said, okay, you stay here, I'm going to go on. And Elisha said, no, I'm going to go with you. And so finally they got to the River Jordan, and Elijah asked Elisha, he said, what do you want me to do for you? Do you remember what he asked for? A double portion of his spirit. He said, that's a difficult thing that you ask. However, if you see me when I'm taken, then you will receive a double portion of my spirit. They got to the River Jordan, and Elijah took off his mantle or his coat, and he hit the water with it, and the water divided. And Elijah and Elisha walked across. There were 50 prophets from Jericho that saw this happen. They watched it. Well, they got across, that was when he asked him what he wanted, and he told him, and so on. And it says about that time then that these horses and chariots of fire came down and separated Elijah and Elisha. And then Elijah was taken up how? No, not in a chariot of fire. There were chariots of fire, but that's not how he was taken. Does anybody remember? Whirlwind, yeah. He was taken up in a whirlwind, and his coat or his mantle fell to the ground. Elisha picked it up, and he goes back to the River Jordan, and basically he's saying, okay, God, tell me if I've got this double portion of the Spirit. And he takes the coat and he hits the water, and what happened? It divided. These 50 prophets are still watching. And so they see him come back across. And apparently they had seen Elijah taken at a distance. And so they see, excuse me, they see him come across, and they know that he is now the spokesperson for God. He is the chief prophet. The interesting thing to me about this is that the next 10 chapters or so are stories, just one story after another, after another, after another, of Elisha and the miracles that he performed. And while Elijah performed certain miracles, the fact is, it was nowhere even close to the number of miracles recorded. Now, he may have done just as many, but if he did, it was not recorded. And so I really don't think he probably did. But Elisha just performs one miracle after another. Now, I mentioned last week, Elijah and Elisha both lived in which one of the kingdoms, the northern kingdom or the southern kingdom? They were in the northern kingdom, yeah. Now, the southern kingdom served God sort of off and on. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't, depending on who was king. But the northern kingdom was Jeroboam was the first king. And the first thing he did, we talked about this last week, is he built the two golden calves, put one up in the northern part of the kingdom, one in the southern part. And he said, this is the God that brought you out of Egypt. He set up his own priesthood with just taking priests from any tribe, not according to God's law. He set up his own feast days that would be close to correspond to the southern kingdom's feast days and what God had established in the law of Moses. And so in doing this, he led Israel astray. And because of that, God took the kingdom away from him. And so you have him, and then you have one generation, and then the kingdom is taken from him. And then you have another king for a little while, and then the kingdom is taken away, and another king for a little while, and the kingdom is taken away. But none of them, now some were really, really bad. Some were really bad. Some were bad, and then all of them worshipped idols. So there were none of them that served God in the northern kingdom. None of them were ever really tried to do what was right. Mentioned last week, just very briefly in closing, the end of chapter 2, Elisha obviously was bald-headed, and some of the, there's about 42 boys that were making fun of him for being bald-headed, and he put a curse on them, and two bears came out and tore them up and killed them, and so he went on from there and returned to Samaria. And I mentioned last week, the moral of that story is don't make fun of bald-headed preachers. That's the moral of that story. All right. Any questions or anything on chapter 2 that anybody wants to talk about? All right. Chapter 3 is about Jehoram. Now, Jehoram is the son of Ahab. And we talked about Ahab earlier. Jehoram is the son of Ahab. He is king of Israel. Jehoshaphat is king of Judah. The king of Moab had been paying tribute to Ahab. After Ahab died and Jehoram took over, then the king of Moab rebelled against Jehoram and said, I'm not going to pay tribute any longer. And so Jehoram got in touch with Jehoshaphat down in the southern kingdom, as well as the king of Edom, and said, will y'all go with me to fight against Moab? And they agreed to do that. And so they headed out to go to battle. These three kings and their armies headed out to go to battle against the kings of Moab. As they were going along, they ran out of water. And they got to this valley, and there was no water there, and they were about to thirst to death, as well as their animals didn't have any water to drink. And so they didn't know what to do. So they contacted Elisha. Elisha said, what you need to do is dig trenches in the valley. Now, it's not going to rain. And there's not going to be any water coming that you'll see. But these trenches will fill up with water, and you'll have water for yourselves and for your animals. And so they did that. And sure enough, the trenches all filled up with water, and so they had plenty of water. Well, the king of Moab got up early the next morning, and he looked down on the valley, and all of these trenches looked like blood. They were red. And I guess it's the reflection of the sun. I don't know. Or maybe God just colored them red. I don't know. Doesn't say. But they were all red and it looked like blood. And so the king of Moab said, what has happened is these kings have gotten mad at each other. They fought each other. And that's just blood flowing everywhere. They've already destroyed themselves. Let's go down and take the spoil. And so he brought his army down. And when they got down there, then there was nothing wrong. with the king of Israel and the king of Judah and the king of Edom. And they all came back and began to fight and totally defeated the king of Moab. And so that's really the essence of the story of chapter 3. It's really a horrible thing there at the very end of it. They were fighting specifically against Edom, and the king of Moab was fighting against Edom, and they were trying to break into this city, and they couldn't get into it. And so it says that the king of Moab took his oldest son, who was supposed to reign after him, and offered him up as a sacrifice to his God. And so they were defeated, and they went back home. All right, anything on chapter 3? Any questions, comments? Chapter 4. There was a widow who approached Elisha. She said, "I have two children. My husband is dead. I don't have any money. And my creditors are threatening to come and to take everything that I have and take my two children to be his slaves." Elisha said, "Well, what do you have? What do you have in your house?" She said, "I have one jar of oil." He said, "Okay, I want you to gather up all the jars and vessels that you can come up with. Borrow them from anybody you can. Just get them wherever you can." And she did that, and he said, "Okay, now then go in your house and pour the oil from the jar that you have that has oil in it into these other jars. And then after you fill up all of these jars, take them out and sell them, sell the oil, and you will have money to pay your creditors." And so she did that. And as long as she had jars there to pour the oil into, the oil kept coming. And it just kept pouring, kept pouring, kept pouring out of this one jar until she ran out of jars. When she ran out of jars, then the oil quit. And so she took them out. She sold them, sold the oil that she had poured up, and paid her creditors. And she was able to live on the rest of the money that she had. And so that's just sort of a little human interest story about Elisha and one of the miracles that he performed. I think there's an interesting lesson there. What kind of lesson could we get from that story? Do what? Faith. Okay. What about what God does for us? How come she didn't have twice as much oil to sell? I guess she had what she needed, but why didn't she have twice as much oil to sell? Because she didn't get enough jars. She limited what God was going to do by the number of jars that she got. If she had had half as many jars, she would have had half as much oil. If she had had twice as many jars, she had had twice as much oil. And I don't know, maybe she exhausted her supply and couldn't get any more. And they didn't have Dollar Generals back then to go buy jars. So she didn't have any more jars. But I think there's an interesting lesson there. And I think sometimes we limit God in His blessings because of our own behavior, because of our lack of faith, because we don't do what we need to do, our part, for God to bless us. I think I did. Seemed like I did. If it's more than 2 weeks ago, I don't remember. I can go back and look at my notes and see. But yeah, you have to have your basket ready for God to fill them up. And I think that sometimes, every time I read this story, though, that's the thought that comes to my mind, is I just wonder how many times I've limited God in my life by not preparing properly and doing what I needed to do to make it possible for Him to give me the blessings. All right. Anything else on that?
Kind of like that movie, you may remember, it was a Christian movie about
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that sometimes we do limit God by our lack of faith and lack of preparation and so on. We failed to do our part, yeah. Somebody posted on Facebook today, Diane read to me right before we came, or while we was eating supper tonight or before or something, about somebody, and I don't remember the exact words, but when you trust God, you don't just lean on your shovel and expect Him to make a hole. There's something to that effect. So, you know, you trust God, but you still get your shovel and dig the hole. That's, and God allows you to accomplish what needs to be accomplished. All right. The next story is a Shunammite woman. And Jesus actually mentions her in the New Testament. But there was a woman who lived in Shunem. She was a Shunammite woman. And Elisha would come through where she lived quite regularly, apparently. And he would, she invited him to come in, said, "Won't you come in and eat with us?" And said, "Then won't you stay with us?" And so he began to do that on a regular basis. And she told her husband one day, she said, "We ought to just build a room for Elisha so he'll have a place when he comes through here." So they did. They built a room for Elisha to stay in, put a bed in it and a table and a chair and a lampstand. And so whenever Elisha would come through, it was in an upper chamber, upstairs room, and she would he would always just go there, and he had this room that he would stay in. And so she was just very hospitable and saw to his needs and so on. One day Elisha said, "Go down and told Gehazi, his servant, said, "Go down and talk to this woman and see what we can do for her. We need to do something good for her. She's been so nice to us." And said, "Maybe we can talk to the king on her behalf or something else." And so Gehazi went down and talked to her, and she said, "What I would like to have is a son." She said, "I don't have any children, and I really wish I did." And so Elisha told her, said, "Okay, you will have a son, and he'll be born to you." So sure enough, she did. And so one day then, after the son was grown, you can imagine how happy she was about this. Well, after the son was pretty much grown, one day he was out in the field working with his father, and he told his daddy he had a real bad headache. He went back into the house, to his mother, and, he died. And so she took him and laid him, on the bed of, Elisha. Shut the door behind him, and she went out and she told her husband, she said, "Okay, I'm going to go talk to Elisha." She didn't tell him why. She didn't tell him the son was dead. And so she went to Elisha, and basically what she said was, "Look, I didn't ask for this son, but you volunteered and you gave him to me, and now he's died, and it's worse now than it would have been if I'd never even had one." So Elisha said, to Gehazi, I said, "You go on and you take this boy, you put him up in my room, you put my staff on him." And so when Elisha got there, sure enough, he was laying on his bed and he was dead. And so he went in and he laid down on top of the child. He put his mouth on his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, his hands on his hands, stretched himself on him. And then he got up and he walked around the house a few times. And then he went back and lay down on him again. And the lad opened his eyes. And so he called Gehazi and he said, "Okay, call the Shunammite woman, tell her to come up here." And so she did. And when she came in, he said, "Okay, now you can take your son." So sure enough, he was alive. So he raised this boy from the dead. Not only did he bless her with the child, but then when he died, he raised the boy from the dead. Again, a couple of just human interest stories. In verse 38 of chapter 4, they went back to Gilgal. There was a famine there. And so the servants of the prophets were all sitting around. And he said, okay, so one of them said, Put on a large pot and boil some stew. Or he told them to. He said, put on a large pot and boil some stew for the prophets to eat. They went out and gathered things to put in the stew. One of them accidentally got some poisonous gourds and put them in the stew. And so when they started to eat it, it was poisonous. And so they said, there's death in the pot. And they couldn't eat. And so Elisha said, bring me some meal. He took the meal, he threw it in the pot, and all the poison disappeared. And so it was no longer poisonous, and they were able to eat. And then another, in verse 42, another guy came and he brought 20 loaves of barley and fresh ears of grain in his sack. And Elisha said, give it to the people to eat. Now, 20 loaves of barley, 20 loaves of bread, is not what you picture in your mind. If you think of a loaf of bread, you normally think of a big loaf of bread. No, that's what we think. It's what you go to the store and you buy a loaf of bread. Well, their loaf of bread would probably be closest correspond to about a 6-inch sub is what their loaf of bread would be. It would just be one little individual loaf of bread that one person would basically eat is what it would be. And so 20 loaves of bread, you're talking about enough to feed at best 20 people with a little bit of grain. Maybe if you stretched it out, you might get enough for 30 people. But there seems to be quite a few of them here. One of the other stories, it talks about it being 50 prophets. Another one talks about it being 100 prophets. So there's probably quite a few of them. Anyway, they said, this is not enough food to feed everybody. He said, give it to them to let everybody eat. And he said, it's not enough. And he said, well, you just go ahead and give it to them, and not only will it be enough to eat, but you'll have some left over. And so sure enough, they did. They gave it to everybody, and when they got through, there was food left over, according to the word of the Lord. What does that remind you of? Huh? Loaves and the fishes, okay. When Jesus fed the 4,000 on one occasion, fed 5,000 on another occasion. Very, very similar type story. You know, there's plenty here. You just take it, you eat it, and God will provide. And so God did that. Again, let me just stop and say this. What we're seeing here is just one story after another of these miracles that Elisha performed. And yet, in spite of the fact that Elisha has a double portion of Elijah's spirit, and in spite of the fact that there's probably 50 times as many miracles recorded that Elisha performed, at least 25 times and probably closer to 50, that Elisha performed over Elijah, the fact is, when you think about the greatest of the prophets, you think about Elijah. You don't think about Elisha. Elisha is always, in our minds, sort of secondary to Elijah. And it certainly was not because God wasn't with him. It was not because he didn't have the ability to perform miracles and do a lot of wonderful things. It's just that that's seems to be the import of what's in the scripture itself is that Elijah was the greater prophet of the two. And I don't know really what made him that greater, but that's what it seems. Yeah, it wasn't Elisha, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, and there's several references in the New Testament to Elijah representing the prophets. And so, again, that's something I can't answer. That's just an observation on my part. All right. Anything else on chapter 4? All right, chapter 5. There was the captain of the king of the army of Syria was a man named Naaman. Naaman had leprosy. Leprosy was and still is a very, very devastating disease. What happens with leprosy is the skin begins to die. And you lose your feeling in it first. You can't feel the nerves in your hand or your feet or wherever the leprosy is. And then it begins to die. And when it does, then the skin just rots off of your body. And so it was considered, and I don't know if it really, is or was contagious, but it was considered to be extremely contagious. So anybody, and according to the law of Moses, as well as just general customs of the day, not just in Israel, but pretty much everywhere, and even still today, for the most part, people who had leprosy would go off and live in what was known as a leper colony. And they would just live with other lepers. So that meant that they had to leave their families behind. Whatever their occupation was, they left that behind. Basically, whatever possessions they had, they left that behind. Whatever social status they had, it was gone. Whatever religious status they had, it was gone. It just totally devastated their whole life. And so it seems that Naaman, at this point, his leprosy had not reached the point where he had to isolate himself. But he has leprosy, and he sees what's coming. And he has a little servant girl that worked for his wife in their house. And she just made the comment to Naaman's wife one day, "I wish that you were over in Israel, because there's a man there that could cure my master of his leprosy." Well, you can imagine, this is like the second in command in Syria that we're talking about, Naaman. And so you can imagine immediately he goes to the king and he says, "Hey, let me tell you something. This girl over here says there's a guy down here in Israel that can cure my leprosy." And so they gather up some gifts and some other stuff, and Naaman and his whole entourage leave, and they go down to the king of Israel and say, "We were told that there's a man in Israel that can cure leprosy." Well, the king of Israel tore his clothes. He said, "He's just trying to pick a fight. I don't know what he thinks." He said, "I'm not God. I can't cure leprosy." And so he was all upset. Well, Elisha heard about it. And so he sent word to the king, and he said, "Tell Naaman to come to my house and see me." And so when he got to where Elisha was, Elisha, and he came up in his chariot, and you can just see him in this royal chariot with all these, whole entourage with him. Elisha didn't even go out to him. He just sent his servant out there, and he said, "You go tell him to dip in the River Jordan 7 times, and when he does, he'll be made clean." Well, Naaman was furious. He said, "The rivers back in Syria are better than the River Jordan. He didn't even come out and see me. I thought surely he'd come out and wave his hands over me and say some kind of incantation, and then the leprosy would be healed. He didn't do that. He didn't even come out. He sent his servant out here, told me to go dip in the River Jordan." And so his servants began to reason with him and said, "Look, if he had told you to do some really great thing, would you not have gladly done it?" And so he sort of settled down a little bit, and he said, "Yeah, I guess I would." He said, "Then why don't you go try what he said and see if it works?" And so Naaman goes to the River Jordan. He dipped 7 times, and when he came out, his leprosy was gone. He was clean. So he went back to Elisha, and he sent word again. He told Elisha, he said, "Now I know that there's no God in all the earth like there is in Israel." He said, "I want to give you this present." Elisha said, "No, I don't want anything from you. I don't want any kind of present." He said, "At least let me give you a couple of mules or something." And he says, "No, I don't want anything." He said, the Lord will, He's the one that did it. He takes care of it. He said, you just go in peace and that's it. And so he left. Well, Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, began thinking about all of the things that he had offered and all of the things that he could give. And he thought, hey, I'm making get something out of this. And so he took his servant with him and he took off after Naaman. And he said, when he caught him, he says, everything okay? And he said, yeah, everything's well. He said, but my master sent me, we've got two young men that have come to us, and he asked me to, if I would, get 2 talents of silver in 2 bags and get 2 changes of clothes. And he said, okay, that's fine. And so he gave it to him. Well, when he got back getting close to home, he told his servants, he said, okay, you go on, don't worry about it, I'll take care of everything from here. And he went on home and he hid what he had in his house. And when he did, then Elisha called him. And he said, what have you done? And he said, I didn't go anywhere. He said, where you been? What'd you do? He said, I didn't go anywhere. He said, do you not think that my spirit goes with you when you go? Do you not think that I know that you went to Gehazi and that you took this stuff that you were not supposed to take? He said, because of that, you will have the leprosy of Naaman. And so Gehazi was struck with leprosy. And it says that he and his descendants forever would have leprosy. Greed has always been a problem. It still is. It is so easy for us to become greedy. It's easy for us to especially want something for nothing. If we can just get something for nothing, we think we've really done something great. And this was Gehazi's problem. He was greedy. All right, anything on chapter 5? You would think that he would have known that Elisha could know that. I don't know. But he thought he could fool him. He lied to him, told him he didn't go anywhere, he didn't do anything. And he said, yeah, you did. He said, my heart went with you. I saw you. All right. Chapter 6. The prophet said, we need a bigger place to live. We want to go down to the River Jordan. We want to cut down some trees and we want to build a bigger house. This one's not big enough for all of us. And Elisha said, that sounds good. Go ahead. He said, well, we want you to go with us. Elisha said, okay, I'll go with you. So they went down and they were cutting down trees near the River Jordan. And one way we're cutting trees with an axe. The axe head flew off of the handle and went in the river. And the prophet that was using it told Elisha, he said, this is a borrowed axe. It's not even mine. And he said, the axe head has gone in the river. He said, where'd it go? And he said, right over there. So he took a stick and he threw it over there where the axe head went, this iron axe head. And he threw the stick over there. And when he did, the iron axe head floated to the top and the prophet got it and so that he could replace it. Again, that's just one of those human interest stories that tells you a miracle that he performed. And other than just demonstrating the power of God and the fact that he had a double portion of Elijah's spirit, I don't have a clue why that story would be put in there. Yeah. Well, you know, you think about the miracles of Elijah, the one that comes to my mind was the prophets of Baal when God sent down fire and burned up the water and the rocks and the sacrifice and everything. And then he fed Elijah when Elijah was fleeing from Jezebel. He fed him with the ravens, and then also the angel gave him that cake that he went on. Was it 30 days? I think he went on the strength of eating that cake. That was the first angel food cake. 40 days. That's the first angel food cake that we know about. And so those were some miracles. But I mean, look at Elisha. He raised the boy from the dead. He parted the waters of the River Jordan. I mean, that's pretty significant miracles, you know. There were a lot of just insignificant ones like this one that are mentioned, if there's such a thing as an insignificant miracle. I've never been able to make iron axe head float.
They're
definitely
there to help create the bolster faith.
Yeah.
But I guess just what I have in my mind is just when God sent
the fire out of heaven. Yeah. There's two and a half, I believe.
Those two right there,
He brought the famine and the lack of rain, then he brought the rain again. There's no question that Elijah had the ability to perform miracles. There's no question about it. And like I said, he may have done a lot of others that we don't know about. They're just not recorded. The only thing that I can think of, and I mentioned this already, that I can think of why these would be recorded, just so many of them like this, is just to show us that he did have a double portion of Elijah's spirit.
But isn't that human nature? We look for God in big ways.
Yeah.
And we don't look for God in small things. And that's why God tells us to be still.
Okay.
Just know that I'm God.
Yeah.
So as humans, we do that. Like Naaman.
Yeah. Right.
But we need to look for God in small, silent ways.
Okay. Yeah. Those are on the internet. Probably can't hear that, but she was saying that we look for, as people, we look for God to act in big ways. And yet many times God acts in a small way. Even with Elijah, you remember when he appeared to him, it was the small, still voice, not the all the big things, you know. So, but yeah, that is true. That's just part of our human nature, I guess. The next story, really, verse 8 through 23 of chapter 6 is sort of funny there. The king of Syria decided he's going to go fight against Israel. So he makes his battle plans, and Elisha goes and tells the king of Israel, said, okay, king of Syria is going to come fight against you, and this is where he's going to be. So the king of Israel is all ready for it before he gets there. Well, the king of Syria backs off, and he says, hey, somebody, he found out about it. So he did it again. Well, Elisha did it again. And it says more than two or three times Elisha told the king of Israel what the king of Syria was fixing to do. And he got really upset. He thought he had a spy in his palace. And he was all torn up over this. And one of his servants told him, said, no, what's happening is Elisha, the prophet of God, knows everything you say in your room. And he's telling the king of Israel. And so he said, okay, well then we need to kill Elisha. And so they decided that they're going to kill Elisha. And so they come down where Elisha is, and they get up and they see all these Syrian army out there, and the servant is scared to death. And Elisha said, prayed to God, said, open his eyes. And when he did, the whole hill was filled with chariots and horses. And they came down and totally defeated the Syrians. And God struck the Syrians blind. Interestingly, they led them to Samaria. They fed them and sent them home. The last part of that chapter is the siege of Samaria and the famine that took place. All right, Lord willing, we will begin with chapter 7 next week and talk some more about Elisha and then move into some of the kings.